Good afternoon. I'm happy to speak with you today about our study, which is the empirical evaluation of a standardized evidence-based care plan for public health, nurse, family home visiting. And first off, I'd like to acknowledge my co-author and mentor, Dr. Karen Monson from the University of Minnesota, who's in the audience today. And I'd also like to acknowledge the public health nurses and families whose data made this study possible. The public health nurses generated this data using the Omaha system, which is a standardized terminology, which is embedded in their electronic health record. And the agency implemented the evidence-based care plan in July of 2014. I have nothing to disclose. All right, so evidence-based guidelines for public health family home visiting were encoded using the Omaha system in 2008 and updated and revised in 2013 through a review of the literature and inclusion of best practice. And nurses from Minnesota, Washington State, Colorado, and other states in the U.S. developed the care plan together with Omaha system experts. And the evidence-based care plan describes family home visiting interventions for 10 problems, including three categories and 35 targets, for a total of 101 interventions. And an intervention is the combination of one problem, one category, and one target, and I'll be describing what problems, categories, and targets are as I continue my presentation here. The care plan is available on the Omaha System Guidelines website, and what we don't know is how PHNs use the guidelines in practice and how policy and unique client needs may influence their documentation. So the purpose of this study was to empirically evaluate use of the family home visiting evidence-based care plan with electronic health record data generated by PHNs providing evidence-based family home visiting services. The study was a descriptive study, a comparative study using a data set of 48,039 PHN family home visiting interventions documented for 1,046 high-risk, low-income women ages 18 years of age and older. And about 47% of the interventions were documented before care plan implementation. And these served as the baseline for comparison to the interventions documented using the care plan, then after care plan implementation. Both descriptive and inferential statistics were employed using Excel and SPSS to examine frequencies and comparisons of problems, categories, and targets, and problem category target combinations. So the first slide here looks at the analysis of problems used, and the Omaha system uses the term problem as a way to classify client information that provides a basis for standardized client assessments. So the agency policy required assessment of the 10 problems in the evidence-based care plan and, when indicated, to use the related interventions for documentation. Therefore, problems were represented in the data when indicated by a client assessment. Not shown in this graph were the majority of interventions, because it made the graph not look very nice, which were 62% before and 65% after that addressed the caretaking parenting problem. And in the guideline, only about 23% of the interventions addressed the caretaking parenting problem. And this means that most clients received interventions for caretaking parenting both before and after implementation of the care plan. And this graph then depicts the other 9 problems in the guideline and the variable occurrences before and after the care plan implementation here. And you can see that these included postpartum, pregnancy, mental health, family planning, healthcare supervision, substance use, abuse, income, and interpersonal relationship. And the biggest changes, as hopefully you can see at least somewhat on the graph, were noted in the documentation after implementation were for the problems healthcare supervision and interpersonal relationship, which showed an increase of 95% and 98% respectively. And this reflects new policy that required PHNs to assess these problems. Some problems were also addressed by PHNs that were not in the evidence-based care plan, and these interventions comprise less than 2% of the data, so above and beyond these problems here that are noted in this graph, showing that PHNs rarely documented interventions addressing problems that were not in the guideline. Further research is needed to determine if this is due to convenience or due to the fact that the evidence-based care plan was comprehensive. All right, so this graph shows categories. And the categories in the Omaha system are the actions completed by the public health nurses. And there are four. They include teaching, guidance, and counseling, and case management, and treatments and procedures, and surveillance. And this graph shows the comparison between the three categories from the evidence-based care plan that were used before and after. And PHNs consistently documented more teaching, guidance, and counseling and surveillance interventions as compared to case management, both before and after care plan implementation. And surveillance was documented more frequently after care plan implementation, and teaching, guidance, and counseling was documented less frequently after the implementation of the care plan. So further research is needed to determine if this shift reflects change in practice due to the numerous screening requirements of a new home visiting model. All right, the last graph here shows the results as related to targets. So this graph shows 15 of the 35 original targets used most frequently before and after care plan implementation. And targets in the Omaha system add specificity to the intervention, and they can be thought of as the objects of the action completed by the public health nurse. So what we saw was that PHNs consistently documented targets of bonding and attachment, medical dental care, and safety for most clients. But we need to do further research to understand changes in distribution of the targets, possibly due to program implementation, policy changes, and also intervention tailoring. So as in any observational study, controls could not be imposed. Therefore, further research is needed to study reasons for variations found in intervention data. So in conclusion, the evidence-based family home visiting care plan appears to have met the needs of public health nurses for documenting home visiting practice. And PHNs used all but one intervention from the care plan. They added interventions as needed, but those interventions were minimal overall. The documentation appeared to reflect both a care plan change and also policy changes. And the documentation appeared to reflect tailoring to meet individual needs, which is a hallmark of evidence-based home visiting. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. A question about the care plan. Is this something that's implemented across the state? Is it a standard across different home visiting program models?
Yeah. So it's not consistently implemented across the state yet, but counties have been working on implementing it. Many states in Minnesota use an electronic health record, and many of the health records, electronic health records that are used, include the Omaha system as the standardized terminology. So we're working towards that, you know, in our group. But a barrier, of course, as many of you know, especially in counties that aren't well funded or where there are fewer public health nurses doing the work, it's about time and about money. So
thank you so much, Joyce, for inviting us to come and talk about our programs today. What I'm here to talk about is implementing an evidence-based model within a non-traditional organization. And I'm really happy to talk to you about what we've done in Indiana. So I want to give you an overview of Nurse Family Partnership. It sounds, I'm imagining most everybody here is somewhat familiar with NFP, and I'll call it NFP from now on. But if you're not, I'd like to talk a little bit about the theoretical framework for our work, some of the the model elements that surround our the fidelity to our model. For those of you who don't know, Nurse Family Partnership is really the result of about 35 years of research and still ongoing. It's really three randomized controlled trials, the first in the 70s in Elmira, New York, with rural white women mostly, and then the outcomes were replicated the next decade in Memphis, Tennessee, and that was a largely urban black population. And then by that time, Dr. David Olds, who's the founder of the program, was with the University of Colorado. So the third trial took place in Denver, and the majority of those in that trial were Hispanics. So he was able to replicate results through those three trials. The third trial, also of interest to this audience of nurses and those who work with nurses, is that in the third trial is when they compared the results of a community health worker with the nurse, and found that on almost every outcome the nurse had better outcomes. So to your point, I can understand, Liz, why you're grateful that you chose nurses. Three outcomes, and when I talk to the public, I like to say, oh, they're very simple, right? But the three goals of our program are to improve pregnancy outcomes. So we enroll first-time low-income moms early in the pregnancy, as early as possible. It has to be by the 28th week of pregnancy. And our nurses follow until the age of two. We would be what's considered a high dosage program. The visits occur anywhere from 2 to 4 times a month, depending on the phase. A mom who goes through the entire 2.5 years will have received between 50 and 60 nurse home visits, and those last about an hour to an hour and a half. So it is considered pretty high dosage. Improving pregnancy outcomes is the first goal. Then the second goal is to improve child health and development. So we want to help parents provide responsible and competent care for their children. And then the third leg of the stool, so to speak, is to improve the economic self-sufficiency of the family. And this is where Goodwill Industries, and I'll talk much more about that in a minute, comes into play, we believe, for our implementation. As nurses, we didn't learn job workforce development. We didn't learn about getting families connected to education and things like that. But with our association with and as employees, indeed, of Goodwill Industries, we're able to connect our families to that, and in fact, are doing a number of studies on what the difference does NFP combined with the force of goodwill. How does that achieve that third outcome better? So that's kind of what I'm here to talk about. I'm sorry that I don't have a beautiful slide for this, but if you see the garden diagram at the bottom, if anybody would like, I'd be happy to send it to you. I got permission from NFP to share this with you. I'm a very visual person, and sometimes for me, a graphic can really speak to this. Our work is grounded in self-attachment, self-efficacy, and human ecology theories. And you can see there in the graphic that those are at the bottom. Those are considered our soil, or the very bottom. Above that, you see the domains. So there are six domains in which we, our nurses talk about it every visit. Now, the percentage of time spent in each domain differs. We have three phases, really, of our program. There's pregnancy, there's infancy, which is from birth to when the child turns one, and then there's toddler, when the child turns one until they're two. And those percentages differ, the amount of time we may spend on those, as a function of our accountability to our model fidelity. Our nurses do have to document and estimate what percent of time they spent on each domain after every visit. So then we can pull up a report and see, did we meet that? And that's really important because it is a part of the model fidelity. Some of the other parts of the model fidelity, we have 18 model elements that we do follow, and as I said, we're accountable to our National Service Office, which, by the way, is housed in Denver, Colorado, and offers us consultation support, nursing consultation, business development consultation, as well as support in IT, marketing, those other areas. But a large part of what they also do is watching out for model fidelity with all of the implementations. So those model elements that we must follow are the range from very specific items about the home visiting, that is, home visits occur in the home. We do certainly at times, you know, meet our clients at school, at work. If there's something unsafe going on in the home, at the corner, restaurant or something, but the majority definitely in the home, one-on-one between a nurse and one client, all the way to kind of the structure of our teams. So there's one nurse supervisor who is master's level prepared for every 8 nurse home visitors. And all of the nurse home visitors are required to be bachelor's level or above. And then they receive reflective supervision from that nurse supervisor weekly for an hour. And that also is documented. So all of these elements really are documented, and it's really the cornerstone of the practice. I've kind of mentioned that, the support that we get. And then I'd like to give you a little history of our implementation. As you know, it's a national program. It exists in about 44 other states. I think there's over 260 individual implementations throughout the country right now. But we are the only implementation in Indiana. We were the first, and we are the only one in the country that's implemented by a Goodwill Industries. And so I'll talk more about that, what that might mean. We started at the end of 2011 with funds through the Affordable Care Act, the McPhee funding. We were able to implement initially in one county, Marion County, and Marion County encompasses all of its Indianapolis. So if you live in Indianapolis, you're in Marion County. So we did get funding, both formula and competitive, through the State Department of Health. Some of my colleagues from there are here with us today. And we received the funding to implement for 600 families in Indianapolis or Marion County. Since that time, we've received some additional types of funding, and we're expanding to other counties in Indiana. So that's coming up. We enrolled our first client on November 11th, 2011, so it's easy to remember, 11/11. Our first baby was born in our program. His name is Ezra, he was born on January 28th of 2012. We had a relatively slow buildup, but we did reach capacity, nearly 600, at the end of the beginning of 2014, end of 2013, we to this point have had over 900 babies born into our program, and we've had 150 graduates of the 2.5 year program. So that's a pretty big thing to ask of a mom who's busy, and you know, to remain with a nurse for 2.5 years. But we've had several really fun graduations. So that's kind of our history up until today. We currently have, it's changing every day, so I have to think about it, but we currently have, I believe, 28 nurse home visitors working with us. And then we have, at this point, five nurse supervisors. So we're growing pretty quickly. So now I want to talk to you a little bit about goodwill. And I'm going to go back and acknowledge what I should have done at the beginning, which is acknowledge kind of my co-authors. So they were supporters that helped me say, Joyce invited you to present, we'll help you compile this. And that's Ashley Jones and Anita Austin and Dr. Joanne Martin. So that's why you saw all those four names up there. I just have to tell you, Anita's on vacation with her husband. I couldn't ask her to postpone that. Dr. Martin was attending the home visiting COIN session, also in Chicago, actually, earlier this week. And Ashley Jones is extremely busy. She is working on her PhD right now, so I decided to let her focus on it. Not let her. She can do whatever she wants. So, okay. So, but my colleague Dr. Martin likes to say, goodwill is the unexpected public health partner, but they should be the preferred public health partner. And I'll explain to you why I say that. If you were to ask me 4 years ago when I sat down and did my SWOT analysis for our program, I have to tell you, I put among the weaknesses, well, Goodwill has never hired nurses. They're not a healthcare organization. You know, how can they really support us well? Standing here today, what I can tell you is it is such a benefit to be in an organization that is entrepreneurial, that is quick moving, and that had no preconceived ideas about what a nurse could and could not do, what a nurse should and should not do. It has turned out to be extremely beneficial for us. I'll talk more about that. So let me tell you, you've probably all heard that the mission of Goodwill International, and it is an international organization, which is a hand up, not a handout. So, I mean, it just follows everything that we believe in nursing and in public health. In the U.S., Goodwill International, though they have oversight over all of the Goodwill's regions, it's like a franchise. So you kind of, you know, you're your own. And they like to say in Goodwill, if you've seen one Goodwill, you've seen one Goodwill. Because they all decide to do something different. The main mission focus would be to provide jobs for those who might have barriers. How they go about that and what they choose to do about that is very different depending on where you are. So, as you might imagine, the Goodwill of Central Indiana that we're involved with is an extremely progressive Goodwill. It does a lot of things. So if you can imagine the thinking that our CEO, and we had a CEO who just retired last year. Fortunately, the new CEO had been our previous operating officer and had been highly involved with NFP, so he's a big supporter and I'm lucky. But if you can imagine a Goodwill CEO going from the 25-year-old working in a store with lots and lots of barriers, no high school diploma, and he connected that to, wait a minute, what happens prenatally? How do we intervene that early to really create a set of circumstances that are going to support that family, support that early brain development, get that child going in kindergarten, successful in school, graduate, and in a family that has the resources to support them to go to college. So those were the thought processes, so you can see what a progressive organization it really is. You can read here, I won't go through all of the things they do. What I want to say is, and you can read the mission and the goals, because I want to leave some time for discussion. I know we're going over. But what I do want to say is that we have a program that we have used as a model enhancement for NFP, and that is with NFP guides. So these guides have a variety of backgrounds. Some of them are social workers. I think there's just one. Some of them are educators. Some of them have other experiences. But they work to consult with the nurse to connect the clients with education and employment. So within our goodwill, we actually have charter adult high schools. So think of a 25, 26-year-old who was not able to complete high school. This individual can now earn his or her college or high school diploma while at the same time earning a certification or some community college credits to pursue education or to get a good job. One of the things that we really want to do is to make sure when our moms graduate that they have reached their educational goals, or they're in the process of doing that, and that they have a job that can help support their family. Additionally, those guides can help support the family and the supportive family around the client. So once you're an NFP client, you're considered part of the Goodwill family, as well as supportive partner, family members, and those individuals also get to take advantage of some of the resources that we have with Goodwill. And I think I better stop because I want to have plenty of time for discussion. So thanks very much. Thanks.
Great, thank you, Lisa. So I'd like now to turn it over to you and have a discussion. Some questions were posed, or if you have questions for specific panel members, experiences you'd like to share, comments, please.
My first question is directed to the family connect model, and it could be a question to whether people sue. That first visit is made in the hospital or where?
Sorry if I wasn't clear about that. The initial contact with the family is generally in the hospital, but that's a very brief, hey, congratulations, okay. Let's sign you up for your home visit.
Okay.
And then the initial home visit itself occurs about 2 to 3 weeks later, which is a time that we found was a helpful time for nurses to be in the home where issues have started to come up and kind of the honeymoon period has worn off. I say that at 3 weeks so far. But then that's the initial home visit, which is about an hour and a half to 2 hours.
Okay. And there's the Family Connect has the how you do that visit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, similar to what Lisa was talking about with NFP, we have like specific points that the nurses are covering during the visit, and we look to those to measure fidelity. To be sure that nurses are sticking to the protocol. And then in terms of rating families, risk, and need, doing that assessment, we look at 12 different factors of the family functioning to make the determinations and to kind of guide the referral process.
I have a question. I'm mainly to the program in Tulsa for the Nurse Family Partnership. We've been in place since 1997, and I've seen an evolution of the way we connect with potential clients, your phone number changes because of the three phones that are all up in the city.
Yeah.
Everybody knows what that is.
Yeah.
So that doesn't change from when I started. It's just dramatic how many clients we lose to that lack of communication. Does anybody have any tricks, feedback, any?
I think I would
audience members again.
I would imagine that those are all issues that we are all facing also, you know?
Yeah. Texting, we're doing a lot of texting.
We do, too.
Yeah, they do texting. Yeah. We're limited, of course. It's just very cryptic because of HIPAA.
Sounds like this might be.
I don't think we do cold calls. In other words, I got the phone, it doesn't work, I go to the house, I have a phone. Hi, I'm your girl. So it's in the neighborhood, we got your name. Can I offer you a visit another time?
That's how I was raised in public health, but I work with a lot of nurses who don't feel safe anymore.
I usually applaud.
Sure.
I would see it. Well, you know, one thing we did, and I'm one of the model developers for the early intervention program, which is also evidence-based trial, but no money to help, gear it up. We, on our research, we did locator guides where we had multiple contacts for other people, like if we need to reach you, because we have to do 6 month follow-up for data and all that. That was really helpful. Is there somebody that we could contact who would know where you are? So that they gave us like that, and it was the voluntary, they gave us that, right? So then it makes it a little bit easier. So we had 3 or 4 phone numbers. We had pretty good.
I had an officer, I worked with the same nurse as well,
right?
And I had a police officer tell me, just get the grandma's phone number. They still
One thing that's come up for us as we've been working with other programs that are already doing home visiting and kind of just, hearing from each other, how are you doing things, this is how we do it, is we found that for us, like, setting the date for the home visit right after the birth or, like, any time we have a contact with the family, we're not saying, hey, your nurse is going to call you to set up your home visit, and we found that there are some other programs that are doing it that way. They'll encounter a family in the hospital after birth and say, this nurse is going to give you a call to schedule it. You're going to lose that family.
And when she's an intake person, she goes to a calendar and says, hey, Susan's going to be at your house at 2:30 on Thursday.
So then you can just show up, even if there's been no contact in that, interim. Yeah. And a lot of times moms are still expecting you.
I have a question about the, also for Liz. It seems like all of the North Carolina sites are able to get some funding from Medicaid. What was the process of going to, state Medicaid offices are clearly different across the country, but how did North Carolina do that?
Yeah, so we basically, there is funding in North Carolina for our Medicaid program for a postpartum and newborn home visit that counties need to be offering that. So like in Durham County, we partnered with our health department and we are offering that.
Oh, that was already in your state Medicaid program.
And so then we just had to adapt. We had to make sure that our electronic documentation met all of those requirements too.
But that's a great, how can then you advocate and engage in the policy process to get that in your Medicaid program? Yeah.
So our county also does universal home visiting, and we've been doing it for many, many years, and not in the exact same way, I'm sure, that they're doing it, but if a family has Medicaid in Minnesota, this is how it works. We bill using a skilled nursing visit code, and we are then able to bill all of our home visiting that way.
Were you saying that are you sort of contracting or getting through the health department?
For ours,
yes.
Our health department files the Medicaid paperwork for us. Just because I think we probably could figure out a way to do it, but they're already doing a lot of Medicaid billing anyway, and our program is based in a nonprofit that isn't doing as much of that. So we kind of partner with our health department to do that. But I know in some of the other counties, some of the other counties in North Carolina, the programs themselves, the direct are the ones going and doing that.
I'm wondering, in relation to your comment about outreach and maintaining contact with clients, Lisa, being with Goodwill, you talk about this idea of that not only is it the mom and the baby that are the client, but the whole family gets engaged in all the wraparound services of Goodwill. Are you encountering, because you have more engagement from the family and those other types of activities, as much problems retaining your clients? I think or hypothesize that perhaps you might have a better some better opportunities to for retention.
Yeah, well, I think we've faced problems with attrition in every compensating program does, I think.
Okay.
But absolutely you're correct. If certainly if a student or somebody's a student of one of our schools, somebody, a family member is involved in other Goodwill programs, if the NFP client makes a decision to drop out, the other members of the family can continue, of course, to receive services. So, yeah.
Interesting.
Referrals, like for you who are doing those inclusive, that you're visiting every family.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think your referrals are? In our health department, we get first reports. We don't get them within a couple of days, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
And we do make an attempt to make a contact with everyone. I don't know whether we give the client a choice.
Mm-hmm.
We'd like to make them all different.
Right.
We have a relationship with our medical providers. I live in Rochester, Minnesota, and so we have Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. So that system is a little bit harder to infiltrate in the sense of being able to actually go and meet with mom when they are still in the hospital. We used to be able to do that. We used to be able to attend care conferences for families who had children with special health needs, and then they got stricter and stricter. So Minnesota has not only HIPAA, the federal, but they also have a data privacy or data practices act, and so it's very strict. And but we maintain the relationship with the nurse managers, and then what we do every year is we go and talk with the OB nurses, the outpatient nurses, the inpatient nurses, the PEDS nurses. We just sort of make our rounds and make sure that they're aware. And of course, they have staff turnover, so it's really important for us to make sure that they're aware. And then our other smaller medical facility, we're actually able to go there every day and do what we call rounds. And so the nurses ask them ahead of time if they're interested in a home visit. And so those families, we always stop in and see. But even if they say no, we're able to visit them in their room and give them some information about our services.
We do similar, going to the hospital, of course, offering it as a voluntary program, but offering it to everybody in the county. And again, partnering with our OBs and our pediatric practices. We've got a couple of OB practices in Durham that do centering pregnancy. And we found that that's a really great place to go and talk to moms as a group. And the whole group signs up. The whole, everybody's like, oh, yeah. And they give us their contact information and their due date. And then if we don't see them in the hospital for some reason, we can get in touch with them over the phone. And they already are expecting to hear from us and knowing that they're going to get a home visit. So that's been a really kind of cool way to get in with some families as well.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
I'll just share something from the NFP group in Oklahoma and Tulsa specifically. We have a nurse that's going to go for LC certification, and so
yep.
We have embedded her in every, she gives a client, every client gets a visit from her prenatal year to go over breastfeeding education, pre and post test, and then she sees them if they need it postpartum, and we've got a 91% initiation.
Wow.
Across the board.
That's
amazing.
That's a great strategy.
So passionate. And she started a Facebook group that is running its own. They have over 100
Well, I'm sorry. Did you have a comment in the back?
It's off the top.
Oh, okay. So, okay.
I'm Jenny, and I work for Illinois DHS and do maternal child programs. This is the last 6 months, we're looking at underbirth childhood health limiting programs and looking at the B standards and what the underbirth childhood don't cover with medical, nursing, and everything else. And I guess what I'm seeing is there's a lot of overlap, and I'm wondering if you guys see that, if you see that in your population. Like they do developmental screens, they do depression screens, and then they go to the health departments and they get some of the same stuff. Some agencies are really good about sharing and getting consents to share back and forth, those types of things, but it's kind of like duplication of services.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine a client is going to do those things all the time. So I just wondered if you have any thoughts on that.
Then I think also what can happen is that even the providers can get a little bit frustrated. So from our perspective, the public health nurses also feel like, why do I need to do a depression screening when they've already had it done somewhere else? And then it turns into my topic of documentation. So then they're like, well, now I have to document all of this information. So yes, it's
for me.
I mean. Well, right. I mean, they really have to be evaluated at all of those things, I think, when you're looking at it really broadly. And I think, again, it goes back to relationships. So, we have very open communication with our clinics and with, any other services like Early Head Start, we have in our community. And so if those families are being seen by those other services, we're often getting a release of information from those families so that we can talk to everybody. And I would say that from public health's perspective, we're usually the ones to do that because we kind of get the collaboration thing. We don't see as much of that outreach from them to us, but that's a way that we're trying to manage that, but it's pretty difficult.
We can continue the conversation offline, but thank you so much for attending. I hope you had a great time at APHA, and hopefully we'll have something on the agenda next year around maternal child health home visiting. So stay tuned. Bye-bye.